the next time I see Aloha Mr. Han, I'm going to have to ask him, is he not a true golfer if he uses a golf cart, NASCAR style, driving with the driver and a golf cart? Or does he walk 18 holes? I'd bet any money he gets a golf cart. Yeah, dog.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
It's time for The Tainted Glove, starring your favorite man of questionable character, Aloha Mr. Han.
Hey bud, let's party.
And the Holy Reverend K-Fids himself. It's go time, so grab a beer, grab a bite, and settle in. It's time for The Tainted Glove.
Aloha, and welcome to The Tainted Glove. I am one of your co-hosts, Aloha Mr. Han, and today is Sunday, September 25th. Joining me, as always, is my partner, the one and only, the Holy Reverend K-Fid, and I have a feeling I'll be needing some, I'll be saying some Hail Marys after today's show. And with us are our special guests from our sister podcast, which we just wrapped up doing, talking about Adam Sandler movies. So make sure you go check out Yumper and Zvo at the show. And with us, the very much mentioned Yumper and Zvo. Welcome all.
Thanks for having us on, guys. A long time no talk.
I know. That was quick, man.
The time it took to empty the bladder.
Yes, exactly. And just so everyone knows, we just wrapped up doing the Yumper and Zvo at the podcast show where we talked about Adam Sandler movies. So definitely make sure you go give it a listen once it gets out there. You should be able to see the video of it on our YouTube channel as well. So feel free to check that out as well and provide feedback. You know, you liked it, you hated it. And of course, if you have suggestions, feel free to send those along as well.
Yes.
But, you know, what can we say? It's a sad day. It is a terribly sad day. The White Sox season is over. It is not technically over, but the Cleveland Indians are the 2022 AL Central Division champions. This is a case where the White Sox overpromised and underdelivered. And let me tell you, for the White Sox organization, anything less than blowing this fucking piece of shit organization up is unacceptable. You've created this fucking mess. Now it's time to clean up this fucking mess. And I'm sorry, Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, you fuckers need to go. You don't know what the fuck you're doing. And for fuck's sake, get someone in there who does. Because this Penny Ante chicken shit bullshit that you put out as a product is fucking disgusting. It's to the point where you have your opponents saying fuck the White Sox in their victory celebration in the locker room. How does that fucking feel? You did all this talking at the beginning of the season. Remember that great NBC Sports channel post about, is anyone else in the division going to show up? Well, yes, Cleveland showed up and left your fucking ass. Hope you're fucking satisfied. And then, to top it all off, you fucking have your mouthpiece, Bob Nightingale, go out at the beginning of this past week and tell people the pressure's on Cleveland. Well, guess what? They fucking swept you. And guess what? So did the fucking Tigers. So pressure, obviously you fuckers don't know what to do with pressure. So you know what? Good fucking riddance, your season's done. Because you need to make some serious fucking changes and look in the fucking mirror and fix it. I'm fucking done.
And with that?
Fucking ridiculous.
You're alive! Oh my God!
I'm alive!
working. I use ninja focus to slow my heart rate down.
It's the Indians. Guardians.
Guardians. Alive. You mean, wait, you mean the 2022 AL Central Division champion Guardians?
Now I'm going to play your drums. Close your eyes. Let the dirt just shower over you.
Boom. That's it right there. That's it, huh? The dirt has showered over the Chicago White Sox in 2022, and the Cleveland Guardians have clinched the division, have posted insane content on social media, trolling specifically the White Sox, obviously without regard to the fact that they are the only division in all of baseball that has only one team with a plus 500 record. But they're going to go ahead and rock it out. So it's been a rough day for White Sox fans. I do offer my condolences to you guys on a season that was.
But let me say this:
not good.
I honestly, I don't blame the Indians or the Guardians for trolling. I really don't. With the amount of shit that the White Sox talked at the beginning of the season, remember it's about fucking parades. Remember that it's about parades. We don't need to go get a right fielder. We don't need to make moves in the offseason. That's how fucking good we are. We don't need to make a move at the trade deadline. That's how fucking good we are. Sorry, no, unacceptable. This is your window, and you can't even be 500. Really? Look at where you stand in the wild card. The fucking Orioles are ahead of you. They are trying. The Guardians won the division. They weren't even trying. You better take a long look in the mirror, White Sox. Front office, and I know people want to say this is Tony's fault. Well, guess what? If you look at the winning percentage that Cairo has as manager, guess whose winning percentage it matches? Tony La Russa, you know, the guy that was the root of all evil and everything wrong with this team. And as my partner Fids put it, when Cairo took over, you're going to get a dead cat bounce, where they'll play well for a couple weeks, and then they will revert back to themselves. And guess what happened? Exactly that.
For you guys as White Sox fans, it doesn't feel like it wasn't just like a loss, and you didn't just barely didn't get it done. This is a collapse. This is what, six games in a row they've lost now?
Yes.
Since the most important game of the season?
The six most important games of the season. And it's not that you lost 2-1 or anything like that. The Tigers came in and swept you and pounded you. Those games weren't close. How do I know that? Because I sat there and watched them.
Yeah, looking as an outsider looking in, I think, first of all, just to say, like, the TLR, Tony La Russa hate is like, it's justified in some aspects, but it's totally overblown. And I think it kind of masks the real issues with the organization right now. Mm-hmm. The Sox won 93 games last year with Tony La Russa as their manager. You can call that a fluke season, but they still won 93 games. Was he a problem? Yes. I'm not saying he's not. But there's things that go deeper that are Tony La Russa. You guys, your offseason, I think, was a complete failure. And I mean, I told you this, Pete, when we talk about it, you know.
Yes.
You guys had holes in the right field you didn't sign. You had a second baseman you signed. Thank God for Johnny Cueto. I mean, you were going into the season with Dallas Keuchel knowing he was unreliable. You know, the signing of Elvis Andrus was great, but you guys had so many holes that weren't filled, and he went to spend, Rick Hahn, that is, went and spent money on a bullpen for a reliever that would have been dynamite if he was healthy, but he
wasn't. Gotta fill those holes.
Yes.
Yeah. Like a five-year-old over here giggling. So
I know.
Holes gotta be filled.
I'm like,
sorry.
They deserve every bit of mocking that you can. Us as fans, we cannot defend them. We cannot defend what has happened because, to be honest with you, Cleveland is a good team. I am not taking anything away from them, but the Chicago White Sox are the largest market in this division by a fucking mile, and they act like the smallest. And yes, the payroll was at $191 million, but look at what the payroll consists of. You still have holes in right field. You got lucky with Josh Harrison at second base that he woke up after 2 months. You got lucky.
Can he repeat that performance? No. As the other White Sox fan in this conversation, like, this
the failures on this system are more than just Tony La Russa. They're more than just Miguel Cairo. I have defended him with my I would with my last dying breath, but the product on the field looks lethargic. The players look lethargic. They don't give a fuck. Yoan Moncada in that series, he had a home run and he had some good defensive plays, but it looks like he doesn't care. It looks like he doesn't give a shit out there. Yeah, you went out and you spent a ton of money on fucking middle relief help. You didn't spend money in right field. You knew that at some point, Eloy Jimenez, Tim Anderson, and Luis Robert were going to spend some time on the IR. Like, you needed depth, and you didn't do it. And I'm worried that we invested in the wrong pieces in the rebuild. I'm worried that Michael Kopech is never going to pitch a full fucking season for this team. I'm worried, and I know, like, we're 3 years outside of Tommy John now, though. Like, we're 3 years outside of it. And I know arm fatigue is a thing, so I'm not knocking the dude. You know, I've met him personally, and he's a nice guy. But I'm worried that maybe his arm is just not built for a full major league season. And I'm worried that we have this kid in Colson Montgomery, and we have Oscar Colas, and they're going to come up to the major league level, and the coaching staff and the little amount of money that we've spent in big league analytics is going to fuck them up as well.
So little spent in analytics.
It's not only that. You're absolutely right on that. But the problems run much deeper because all these players, the fundamental structure of this White Sox organization is almost non-existent. I want a farm system from rookie ball all the way to AAA. I want them to have two purposes. Two. Teach fundamentals. Teach them to hit a fucking cutoff man. Teach them when to go from first to third. Teach them things like that. Teach them how to hit to the opposite field if need be. How to choke up on the bat with two strikes and try and take it the other way as an approach instead of swinging for the fucking fence all the time. The other thing I wanted them to teach them is how to fucking win. This is a loser fucking organization. There is no two ways around it. The only reason they treat their minor league systems like they're just there as assets to trade to get the next high price past their prime player who has a name.
Hot minor league prospects. I'm so fucking tired of hearing about hot minor league prospects. That's what this whole rebuild was about. And right now it looks like a failure. It looks like the peak of the fucking rebuild is going to be a game 3 win in the ALDS against the Astros, the blackout game. And that's about it. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know where to start. Like, Han and Williams have to go, but I don't think Jerry's loyalty will allow that to happen.
I think what's going to happen is Han is going to get the Dilbert principal treatment. He's going to be promoted probably. And my fear is that they move Chris Getz in as the GM, which will be awful because part of the reason the minor league system sucks so bad is because Getz was the guy in charge of it. And what gave away Getz might be moving up? Project Birmingham. Remember when they were going to put all these prospects together so that they can all grow together. Teach them fundamentals. Teach them how to fucking win. And you know what? You don't do that in Birmingham. You know where you do that? Kannapolis. You do it in rookie ball. Mm-hmm. You start there and Winston work your way Salem. Up.
On a positive note, by the way, friend of the show, Tanner McDougal, is at the end. He just threw his last bullpen of his rehab assignment, and now he is now moving into development again. So
outstanding. How's he feeling?
Nothing touched lower than 95. He wasn't happy with his location, but in the simulated games, he got outs. That's all that mattered. But he's not satisfied because that's what he is. He's always going to be hard on himself.
As long as he's not doing towel drills, I'll be happy.
Nope. He's rocking. So that's a good news. But, you know, the thing is, too, with you guys, with Sox fans, it's hard for this. What changed? What changed from 93 wins to this? What can you do to put a finger on the alterations to that clubhouse and effort? And you look at the things that have happened. Look at Tim Anderson's off the field drama. Look at Moncada, you know, maybe just being kind of just disinterested. Look at, you know, the Tony La Russa drama. Look, just all the way across the board. Did this season for you guys, it just felt like there was a giant rain cloud over this franchise.
It never felt right.
That from the start, yeah, it didn't feel right. Like, it just felt like it was just off, and it was always off.
And, you know, one of the things I really am anxious to hear, because I know we're going to be lied to as fans, and that is the end of season press conference when the excuse train starts. There were injuries. It wasn't a full spring training. The weather. All these different, you know, they didn't play to the back of their baseball cards.
Well, didn't Cairo kind of do that already? Like, in his couple days ago, didn't he start saying that there were injuries on the team? And
yeah. Yeah.
He absolutely, like, said some of those things and alluded to those things. And you kind of heard that they were going to try to sneak that in there and use it as a scapegoat. But that's why you build depth on your roster and you get the right pieces in place. Because injuries are part of the game. The Guardians dealt with it. The Twins dealt with it. You know, and I know the Twins fell apart at the end.
The Dodgers have dealt with it.
Like, I know the Twins fell apart at the end, but Buxton went on, like, season-ending surgery. Like, that shit happens. You build depth for that. And instead of giving money to Graveman and instead of giving money to Kelly, go out and fucking spend it on a right fielder or a second baseman. And if Han didn't try to be fucking cute to begin with, you'd have a right fielder named Bryce Harper in the fucking outfield, because that's who the money should have went to.
Yes. A lot of this goes back to 2019. They pursued the wrong guy, Machado, and they fucked that up. And again, Han needs to go for the simple fact that one of the main tenets of the rebuild was to have a continual pipeline of talent to weather injuries and to use as assets to trade to fill in pieces they may need. That was like one of the main tenets.
That sounds like my social life in the 20s. I needed a continual pipeline of talent to come in and take care of slow.
Right. But that alone is why he should be fired, because that is an absolute failure. It's almost a negligent failure. And the fact that they had Luis Robert out there playing when he obviously had a hand injury of some kind and couldn't hold a fucking bat.
So what are the answers? Fids, you're a baseball guy. You fucking know baseball. I defend you to people all the time. That fucking dude knows baseball. What's the answer here? What is the answer here to make this roster competitive again in 2023?
I don't think it can be, to be honest.
I think that...
Well, there's one way, but it'll never happen.
I think that...
Aaron Judge? Is that what you're thinking, Pete?
That's always a good one. I do think that... I think you do need to send a message. I mean, Moncada, he's... To me, observed him now this year, especially when things don't go well, that reveals the character of the individual. And if you look at how Moncada struggled this year, it's pretty big red flagged in my opinion. I mean, you could see it in that huge game where he was caught looking at his shoelaces and they were able to steal third. And then obviously he's never even covered third. And he's just all out of whack. He's not trying, and he hits meaningless home runs when it doesn't matter. And yeah, just for him, I think maybe can you get something for him? Change his scenery, maybe not focus on the production out of the third base spot and find something else. Can you, you know, is there somewhere else where you can fill this in? I mean, I like the idea of bringing back Andrews. He's great. He could go wherever you got, you know, wherever you need him. But I think there's a mindset in that clubhouse that doesn't understand what it's like to win. And I think you need to bring in people that have won. So I think that if you can find in free agency players that have experience in winning situations, you try your best to bring them in and find a spot in that clubhouse for them, because this clubhouse does not know how to win.
And it's just take it a step further. This organization doesn't know how to win.
It's true. Yeah. Got to take it from the outside. Bring somebody in. Yeah. Clean slate. That's somebody from the inside.
I went on the Score a month or two ago, and I talked to Parkins and Spiegel. And what I said was they need to bring someone in at the top and clean house, because there's an institutional rot in this organization. and they need someone to come in with no ties, no affiliations, and clean house. Now, someone goes, well, go get Theo Epstein. The only way you get him to listen, let alone show up, is if you say, here's a 3% ownership stake in the team. It's the only way you're going to get that. So you need to find the next Andrew Friedman or Theo Epstein in order to do this.
Yikes. Yumper just posted or put in the chat one of the comments from Michael Kopech's sister, Casey, about the White Sox fan base, and it's brutal. It is
She's probably not wrong.
I mean, she's probably not wrong. This is what she said. We're supposed to be nice all the time and ignore or not say anything, but I'll say it. I don't give a fuck. Everyone's talking so much shit on the Sox, but our fan base fucking sucked this season. Yeah, we have the few that are ride or die, but a big majority have only watched the post negative content. Look, we are all part of White Sox Twitter. We know that there are people out there that just love to be negative and talk shit.
Yes.
But sometimes you have to have accountability, and your fan base is where you're going to start with accountability, because they like it or not. I don't want to be that guy. Well, we pay your salary, but if there's no butts in the seats, then you're not making concession money and you're not doing all those other things. So I feel like the fan base has a right to bitch.
Well,
it doesn't have the right to fucking be negative dicks all the time where, you know, it's not deserved. Right. Like,
right.
You got to fucking chill out sometimes. And sometimes you become a keyboard warrior and you won't say things to someone that you would say to their face.
Right. And
I have to fart. So
that's a great point by Zvo. And that is why I copy the White Sox on every snide comment I make, because you know why? I'm man enough to sit there and say, hey, I'm saying this about you. You need to look at this, you know? And the thing is, I agree. I don't believe in personally attacking a player. You know, I don't get into the whole Tim Anderson baby mama drama. You know why? I don't know if it is or isn't. It's none of my fucking business if it is, you know? But the performance of the product that we pay for, we have every right to express our displeasure about the performance of the product. Especially when they went out of their way to tell us how it's about parades and championships. Talk to me when there's a parade. Oh, look, will the rest of the division show up? Well, guess what? Cleveland showed up and lapped your ass. And you know what? You keep playing like this, Minnesota's going to lap your ass too.
I think like what Swole was saying is completely true. I mean, just looking at it from a Cubs perspective,
right?
Like, we have fans who get mad at, you know, ownership and the way players perform, but they still come to the games. Like, I have upper respect for White Sox fans, because White Sox fans, they kind of like tell it like it is. Like, if they're not good or they don't like the way things are going, they don't show up. Like, that's one thing I, as a Cubs fan, I can't stand certain aspects of Wrigley Field when we're so bad that we still come to the games. I think it's totally agreeable, like totally okay to boo your team if they're underperforming. I think it's okay to, also cheer the shit out of your team when they're doing great. I don't think it's okay when you go on social media attacks and tell people to die and go against their family because it's a fucking baseball game.
It's a baseball game.
But when it comes to performance, like, you're going to be called out on it. It's not going to be, you know, sunshine and rainbows and that. You're a professional athlete and you're expected to deliver.
Can we?
And unfortunately, they didn't deliver this year.
They didn't. Can we address the other elephant in the room that's driven me crazy the last couple of days? I am a White Sox fan. I've always been a White Sox fan. I don't like the Cubs. I don't like the Twins. I don't like the Guardians, the Tigers, or the Royals. When Javi Baez is up to bat, I'm going to boo the shit out of him because he's on the Tigers. And he was on the Cubs. But I'm going to boo the same shit out of Miguel Cabrera and everybody else on that fucking team because they're on a team that is my rival. So it's been going around on Twitter the last couple of days. It is okay to boo the other team if they are up to bat and you don't like them. I just want to say that, like, if you're at a game and you want to boo all the time if it's your rival on there.
And all seriousness, if you're a fan of a team and you're not hurting anybody, I don't tell you how to fucking fan because I don't want anybody to tell me how to fan. That's not how it is. And that shit is one of the most annoying things on Twitter, Cubs Twitter, White Sox Twitter, any fucking team Twitter. They tell you how to fan.
Dude, I was in I was in Lambeau Field last week, and there were some Bears fans. There weren't a lot of Bears fans, but I booed when the Packers starting lineup was announced. And I cheered when the Bears were announced because those are the teams that I fucking root for.
And that's totally fine, dude. I've been to Cubs games where fucking Cardinals fans get up and start like throwing their thumbs up when they score runs. And I think it's hilarious because
you're
it's
allowed to
part
boo
of the game.
You're allowed to boo a player that you don't like.
Absolutely.
You're not allowed to say stupid fucking shit and stuff that's inappropriate, but you're allowed to boo.
You're not. Yep. And you're not allowed to. You shouldn't sit there and go, I hope you fucking die, you piece of shit. No, right. That's over the line. But to over say, boo, I think you suck.
And here's my thing, too. I have a my boo standard. I don't boo performance. I boo effort. Performance is I appreciate the performance as being so difficult that I need not pour it on. They're not trying to intentionally lose. Booing performance to me is counterproductive. But if you're, you know, showing your ass, you're not running, you're not hustling, you're not focused, you're not actually playing the game as you should the right way, I'm going to boo the shit out of you. That's when you're going to get it. That's my boo standard. It's not so much the performance. I won't boo. Guy goes, you know, guy has a bad day at the plate. Dude, he's just not seen it that day. I understand how that feels. So I'm not going to be like, ah, boo, you suck. Like, I'm like, yeah, you know, shit, that guy's going to go to the shower tonight. He's going to be kicking his own ass all night. So he's going to be harder on himself than fans could ever be on him. So I leave that be. But
right. But if you have a mental lapse where you're running first to third with only one out and the right fielder catches the ball and doubles you off first.
Oh, yeah.
I'm booing your ass for that one.
Yep. You wear it. That's a mental fuck up. That's different.
Yep.
Javi Baez has done that a couple times.
Jimmy oh, absolutely.
Threw an couple. Interception with 2 minutes left.
Couple.
Yep. And the Broncos are winning 11-10. That's Broncos a barn burner.
Yeah, Jimmy G just threw another pick.
An unhappy, there'll be an unhappy nom. But, I mean, as far as the White Sox are concerned, this offseason for them may be more critical for them than even the 2016-17 offseason when they started the rebuild. To be honest with you, because you have two different paths to go down here. They're at a fork in the road, and they need to choose which side of the road they're going to take. Are they going to take the run it back with the same core, but you obviously add the pieces you need road? Or are they going to take, we're going to rebuild again and try and trade off an Eloy, or I don't think they'll get anything from Mankata because of that contract he has coming up next year. Oh, God. Or are they going to go down that road? That's where they're at.
I never once thought I would say this, but I am jealous of the season that Cubs fans had because at least the team like put out a consistent effort and wanted to be there.
Yep.
Yep, that's true. I mean, the Cubs didn't have the talent that they should have had, but these dudes put it out there. They laid it out there.
Was there. Like they put it all out on the line and you leave it all out on the field. And that's like, it sounds cliche, but that's the season that I wish the White Sox had. Cause if they did, we wouldn't be talking about Cleveland clinching the division today.
And for those guys, it's not their fault. They're undermanned. It's not their fault.
Right. And I'll say this to your point about the Cubs. It's weird to sound this way. I don't mind losing if you are trying and you are outmanned. You know, I use the Bears as an example. Like against the Packers last week, it was just a different class of player between the Bears and the Packers. You know, you understand that. But if you lose because for lack of effort or for lack of caring, because I'm sorry, you went 0-6 on this homestand, which is the most critical homestand you've had in a few years. You went 0-6. To me, that's not, and one of the teams you were swept by is the Detroit Tigers. There is no way you can tell me they have more talent than you do. So it obviously becomes an issue with effort and desire.
And you can't blame the fans because you drew $150,000.
That's where I have an issue.
You drew 150,000 fans in that series. So you can't blame the fans for not showing up for that series.
Yes. Yes.
I just think it comes down to
you were over 30,000 each night.
It just comes down to what Jerry wants
to do. Oh, absolutely. It comes down to what. And the problem is, Yeah, and the problem is Jerry's greatest virtue is also his greatest vice, and that is his loyalty to people.
And the funny
that thing is his greatest virtue, but it is also his undoing in a lot of respects.
It's funny you mention that because, like, there's a lot of similarities between the way Jerry runs his organization and the way the McCaskies run theirs. They're very loyal to a fault,
and
unfortunately, it messes up the organization as a whole.
Do you know what the difference is, though? Like, between the McCaskies and the Reinsdorfs, but like when it comes to running like an actual sports organization, the fucking salary cap in the NFL. McCaskies have to spend at least
NBA and the NBA and the NBA too.
Yeah. Well, and I don't understand why Jerry was willing to give up control to Michael for the Bulls and get rid of guard packs and reorganize that front office, but he's not willing to do it on the South Side with the White Sox. I don't know, man.
Baseball is Jerry's passion. I mean, he's the same guy who said he would give away the 6 Bulls championships for another Sox Bulls series.
I don't think at this point of his life that Jerry's passionate about anything other than a consistent bowel movement, like, if I'm being honest.
You know, and the thing is, the one fear I really, really have, and I've said it to you guys, and I said it to a couple others, but I'm saying it publicly for the first time, is that the White Sox have entered the Bill Wirtz phase of their franchise.
But that's okay if they've entered the Bill Wirtz phase of that franchise, because eventually Dollar Bill went away,
right?
And I'm not wishing anything on anybody. Yeah. Let me preface that. Dollar Bill went away, and Rocky came in and took over and won 3 cups in 10 fucking years, right?
Yep.
So, like, if we're in that phase, then, you know, like they said in The Dark Knight, it's always darkest before the dawn, right? Like,
yep. But you don't know how long that phase is going to last. That's the only issue with it.
And then you guys make a great point of how it's a mom and pop organization too, and how it's kind of run similarly to the next thing that we should probably jump to, which is something that occurred more recently this morning. Bears improved to 2-1 with an ugly victory over the Houston Texans.
Understatement of the year, Michael.
Rex is our quarterback. Rex
dominated the ground. And what did Justin Fields pass for, like, what, 97 yards or something like that, or 103, or I don't know, but they still got the W. So we're here now. Happened. Bears 2-1 and technically, theoretically, first place, you know, tiebreakers aside. How are you guys feeling after seeing what we saw today? Today, we can't blame the weather and we can't blame it being a road game at Lambeau. It was a home game on a regular day where the weather was pretty normal. So what do you think?
I mean, I'll kick it off if you don't mind.
Go for it.
I think that Justin Fields is 3 games into a new offensive system, and Luke Getsy has already got the ground game rolling, and I think that it's too early to make any judgments. I think that, we don't know what we have. Like, we might have, you know, the next great quarterback, and we might not. It's 3 games into his tenure. I think that he's going to eventually put it together. I think that they're going to spend some money on a wide receiver in the offseason. They're going to draft a wide receiver in the first round. They're going to sign a tackle and a guard. And I think I have some confidence in this kid still. I'm not ready to pull the fucking plug after 3 games.
By the way, the Niners just fumbled. That ball game's over.
That's a bad turnover right there.
Yeah, that's rough.
That's a really bad one.
So,
guys, I gotta interrupt for 1 second and read a tweet from Ryan McGuffey. And if this doesn't make your blood boil, I don't know what will. A-Rod jokes here about resetting the Hall of Fame clock for one more AB. ... Says, maybe I can talk to my boy Jerry Reinsdorf.
Everybody loves A-Rod.
So,
that's how you perceive that
you could be like the fallback position for some clown to get another at bat and reset his World Series clock or his Hall of Fame clock?
Could Alex Rodriguez be any more narcissistic at all in his life? Oh my God, I can't believe that's a real quote.
Yeah. I think Jose Canseco probably has some things to say about A-Rod.
Oh, you know, do you think?
The funny part is, man, is like I grew up loving the Mariners and Alex Rodriguez. Like I absolutely did. And he is just such a fucking tool.
Yeah. Just a and the worst, you know, worst color commentator ever. He's so bad.
But you know what? When he first came on like Fox Baseball, he was good as an analyst, like going I'm saying as a pregame analyst, not in game, but he would great job doing that. I think David Ortiz sucks on the panel, personally. I think A-Rod's better than him, but A-Rod calling a game is horrible.
Small doses. Small doses.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just remember watching A-Rod during that 2020 COVID season with no fans to offset his voice, and it was the worst thing I've ever experienced. Because there was a Cubs Sox like Sunday night game during that COVID season that A-Rod and ESPN did, and it was just brutal.
Was it Cubs Sox or was it Sox Indians?
No, there was a Cubs. Well, there was. I think there was both.
Okay.
Like, but I remember it being Cubs Sox, and it was just ass. It was ass cheeks.
So
yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Yep.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, so with A-Rod not returning to the Chicago Bears. I'm just trying to reel us back over to the Bears.
Bears.
I actually really curious too, because Yump today. I mean, what was your thoughts? I mean, I've noticed you've been a little bit critical of Getsy's play calling from the get go, and today I feel like it was a little bit more of the same, where it was kind of uninventive. What did you think about the play calling itself and how it kind of like played to the personnel?
So I understand what they went with today. Like Getsy was calling a lot of runs to, because the Texans are a horrible rush defensive team. I understand what was going on, but you have to give Justin some confidence in making passes. And when we went to the red zone, you have to give him more red zone opportunities to throw a pass for a touchdown. If it's just one play, that's cool, but 92% of the time the Bears are having running plays in the red zone, and I think that's a little way, that's way over the average of 41%, which is the league average, by the way. And I think Luke Getsy is either not confident in Justin Fields or he's still figuring himself out today. And what Swole was saying earlier about you can't judge Justin Fields, and I totally agree with that. I think Justin Fields has a lot of upside. And to be honest, I watched the football after show with your boy David Kaplan today. But
sorry.
But Lance Briggs and Dave Wanstead, and they were said on there, you can't really fault him as much for, yeah, he needs to play better, but dude is getting hit constantly. On, he's been sacked 10 times the past three games, which is a ton, and he's getting hit a lot as a quarter, you know, on the plays that he's not getting sacked. So that has a lot to do with him. Maybe I just hope he doesn't get no shell shock with this line, because it reminds you a lot of David Carr when he was getting destroyed when he first went with the Texans. Mm-hmm. But I think they need to start building confidence and have him do more rollouts. Screen passes and bubble screens are John Shoup era. We need to get away from that. I know we don't have the weapons, but at least give him some confidence to throw a deep ball here and there. I know he didn't look great today. It's just, that's just the way I feel.
I mean, I said it all day in our chat. Like, get this kid on the move. Like, move him out of the pocket and let some of those wide receivers get open downfield, and let's build his confidence. I mean, I already like Luke Getsky's zone blocking for the run game. It's very, very like Kyle Shanahan-esque, but like we gotta move this kid out of the pocket. Go ahead, Pete. I'm sorry, boss.
Have they attempted a pass downfield in three games? Have they really attempted a pass downfield? I'm talking about airing it out 30, 40 yards. I don't remember one.
I don't think so. I think it has to do with the receivers too, because Mooney hasn't been getting open.
Mm-hmm.
But Mooney looks like ass. Mooney does not look like a number one wide receiver out there.
But even just for confidence building, like in the red zone, let him throw a pass to somebody. I don't think, has Justin Fields thrown a touchdown this year?
Yeah, he threw two. He threw two in that Niners game.
Yes. Okay, so he has two.
Because it missed extra points.
Okay. But like the past two games with Green Bay, which Green Bay I just chalk up as a loss.
Well, Green Bay, he had like zero time to do anything.
Yeah. And this game, like he should have had more pass attempts to even get out. And Cole Kmet was actually catching the ball today too, which I thought was amazing.
One of his picks was a wide open Cole Kmet too, though he had a couple. Yeah. Those picks were pretty bad. Like
yeah, and I think that could also be doing to Russ.
They sailed,
like,
they sailed on him for sure.
Not, yeah. But not doing it in repetition.
Yeah, I mean, gotta get in a rhythm.
Mechanics.
Yep, we gotta get in a rhythm too.
I think the schedule is really, really favorable for these first few weeks. Like, you have New York next week, then you have Minnesota, and then you have Washington. Washington shit the bed against a Philly team today.
Bears could win out the stretch. This like, is a stretch, a winnable stretch for every single ball.
I don't
ball.
Know about the Vikings.
Dude, the they Vikings almost lost to the Lions today. They should have lost to the Lions today at home.
If my aunt had ball, she'd be my uncle. Like, you know I what mean, I mean? Like,
the Lions missed a field. Was it the missed field goal? Is that what it was? That was the difference.
Let's call a spade. The Bears aren't Super Bowl Super Bears. This
nah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a racist term, and I don't appreciate it.
No, a spade. I'm sorry about that, sir. But I'm talking about cards. But anyway, I'm saying the Bears aren't. We're not expected to win. So
no,
that's why I think let Justin could do his struggles, you know, through growth through struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Let him air it out. Who gives a shit? If he throws a pick, he throws a pick. Let him learn from it. If he can learn from it, and that's something he needs to do with this system.
Well, and that's what we said since the beginning. This season is not about wins and losses.
Yes.
It's about what progression can we see from Justin. And then next year you have all that cap space yep. and your first round pick back.
Mm-hmm. $123 million.
And what I want to see is I want to see that kid from USC or that kid from Ohio State in the first round. I want to see T. Higgins signed in free agency. And then I want the interior line addressed. And I want a fucking franchise tackle.
Makes a lot of sense. That's a good wish list.
I think it's a great wish list.
Like, that's what the team needs. Like, the defense is okay. The defense yeah. is at some point in the second or third round, you need to draft a big freaking tackle to replace Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman, because that's where they're getting killed at on the defensive line.
Yes.
They need like
pluggers.
A defensive tackle to plug that line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but most of your offseason should be spent shoring up this offense.
Yep. 100%. I mean, the defense, I mean, Eddie Jackson's kind
Absolutely
of finding the fountain of youth for a second here. He's got a couple picks already in the first 2 weeks or first 3 weeks.
For someone with a bad hip, Roquan was all over the field again today.
Yep. That was a great, that was a game that won the game. Obviously that was huge. And he looked, I mean, he had like 12, 14 tackles at that point too. Pay the man.
I also think that if they had their number one cornerback, then like Mills wouldn't have thrown for what he did today.
Jalen Johnson was out, yeah.
Jalen Johnson was out today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do think Brisker and Gordon are – like, Brisker's already good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think Gordon will get there too.
Yeah. We've got a solid secondary. It's building out well. It's a matter of the offense.
It was a weakness that they turned into a strength.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the offensive line is, you know, I'm old school from this perspective. Football is won and lost on the lines, offensive and defensive. Block or not be blocked. You know, you want to block on the offensive side, you want to avoid or get through blocks on the defensive side. And I think the offensive line is the obvious Achilles heel for this team. And they need to address it. I understand you're not getting it addressed this year. I get it. But with all that cap space you have next year, you better go out and get primo. To your point about a franchise-altering tackle.
Yeah.
You know, to your point. Absolutely.
And that's why I don't – like, I'm going to take this year not to judge Ryan mm-hmm. Poles yet. I'm going to let him have that, because next year he's going to be where we're going to see how he's going to spend our money. How he's going to draft, because this is his first year. I'm assuming he's going to learn, you know, study himself and learn the team. Next year, I want to see how he does. And if he sucks next year, then I hope he doesn't. But
right,
and we have a much bigger problem.
I also think this offensive line looks different when Lucas Patrick is playing center and not guard, and he's snapping the ball to Justin Fields.
Yeah, could see that. And the thing is, to all your points, you know, what I hope. The one thing I hope that Poles can do, which I felt Ryan Pace was god-awful at, is being a critical scout, being harder of a scout on what you have versus what opponents have,
yeah.
so that you know we want to keep this guy can go. And we know we need this position, let's go get him. And going out and saying, targeting, looking at that free agent list and targeting, this is the guy we need. This guy is not what we want. But it's a critical factor that you need to be harder on yourself and the product you built versus the product other people built. And I think that was one of the main downfalls with Ryan Pace, besides the fact that he was a hipster doofus who didn't know what the hell he was doing. He could not critically assess his product and shift off of that and address issues. His drafting sucked.
What are you talking about? Kevin White was awesome.
So was Adam Shaheen.
Did I ever tell you guys about my Kevin White experience?
Oh, did you meet him in the store?
So no, not in the store. Kelly and I, when we first got together, when we first moved in together, we didn't have cable at the house. Like, we were cutting the cord, and I wanted to watch the NFL draft. So I went to our favorite Buffalo Wing establishment on 35th and Halsted to watch the draft. And I didn't realize that it was also the host of Kevin White's watch party for his family, because the draft was in Chicago that year.
Oh,
so
that's right.
Kelly and I are eating wings, and they draft Kevin White, and some dude just starts booing the TV. And all of a sudden, this group of like 30 people stand up. And they look over and they look at me, and I'm like, it wasn't me. I swear to God, it wasn't me. And I thought they were going to murder this dude.
And that dude was right.
Yeah, I mean, he was right in hindsight. I know that, like, so.
Was that dude Ken W.O.?
No, Ken W.O. Ken W.O. was flat on Twitter tonight, guys.
Like, was it Barry Bag of Donuts?
No, Barry Bag of Donuts. Oh, my God. Yeah, Ken W.O. called me fat on Twitter tonight, so I might have to address that. Anyways, I know that we've talked about the Bears. Can I have like 30 seconds here, guys?
Take it.
30. Go for it. You could have 32 seconds.
Yeah.
The game day experience at Soldier Field is fucking ass. The game day experience at Lambeau Field was a million times better than anything I've ever experienced at Soldier Field. Titletown, across the street from the stadium, has these bars and these restaurants and a fucking sledding hill and like a Topgolf for you to go to these breweries and engage outside. And then they have the rec center, which is where the University of Green Bay Phoenix play. But they host these Bart Starr tailgates where it was like $50 a person, but it was all the brats and all the burgers and all the beer you could drink for like 3 hours. And we paid, I shit you not, $60 to park. And it was directly across the street from Lambeau Field. If you want to park in the south lot at Soldier Field, it's $150 to park, and you still got to walk a mile to the stadium. The game day experience at Soldier Field is ass cheeks, and I cannot wait for them to move to Arlington Heights. Thank you for your time.
By the way, can I just add a little something? Let's just say I know somebody who works in the trades. Just say. They have a proposal out for a large project in Arlington Heights.
Interesting.
Yes. And it is a subcontract for a project management firm which has been known to work with the NFL. Just saying. And it is one of the two large construction companies in the Chicago area.
As long as it's not the same designer of stadium that did Guaranteed Rate Field, then we are
no. Gonna... It is the designer of the stadiums. They've engaged the same person. I know that the plans that they showed were done by the same group that designed SoFi, that designed Allegiant mm-hmm. in Vegas. It's the same group.
I mean, it needs to happen. Like it yes. has to happen. Going forward, the Bears deserve a better stadium, and Bears fans deserve a better stadium experience.
And the funniest thing, I don't know if you caught this today, it was subtly mentioned on the Bears pregame show on Fox 32, but they talked about how the Bermuda grass that they put in at the request of Eberflus is holding up much better than the grass they had before.
Yeah.
Now, the fucking head coach had to tell the Chicago Park District, hey, maybe use this grass. It might hold up better. Think about that for a second.
That's pretty... That's good on Hammerfist, though, man. That dude's... That's the hits, and also it's about fescue.
The hits and the turf, man. Yeah. Let's go.
Turf. T-U-R-F. Tough under... I got nothing. But
it should be Turk. Tough under ridiculous conditions, but, you know.
Not Turk 182. Well, yeah, and so, and the thing, you know, we talk with the Bears right now. The Bears are trying to learn to win, and they're trying to push past, you know, this little phase. You know, jumping kind of as a segue to, you know, we talked about it with the White Sox and now with the Bears, but with the Cubs, you know, the Cubs, obviously the major league product right now is kind of doo-doo butter right now. But at the lower levels where all the dreams are sold and all the optimism reigns supreme, the Cubs have multiple minor league system franchises that played for their championships. They won the Midwest League crown. Three Cubs affiliates actually reached the playoffs this year. And so you're getting this mentality through the Cubs organization of winning postseason baseball, dogpiling, competitive type of stuff. And I, you know, we talked about it with the White Sox before on the show, how the fact that a lot of these prospects, they kind of jumped up. They were just getting their work in so they can get up to the show. They weren't really there to win. They weren't really there to play competitive baseball. They were there just to get their work in. And in this case, the Cubs organization on the other way is actually trying to foster in winning minor league affiliates so that the mentality of winning is not lost on these guys as well. And I think that that's where the White Sox, I think, have struggled. I asked Pete the other day, you know, when was the last time a White Sox, you know, minor league franchise won their franchise, you know, their league championship, or, you know, where, you know, it's kind of hard to find. And that's a,
I think there was one in like 2012 or 2013.
And so here they are, everyone's getting in that situation. So you're not only developing talent, but you're developing a winning mentality. Yup. For you, granted, we're not going to buy into the whole, hey, you know, none of this matters if they don't actually do it at the major league level. But what do you think about how the Cubs have taken this and have really encouraged that kind of winning mindset at all levels, from the lowest levels all the way on up?
I think it's a good thing. It's something that Jed and Theo, when they first came into the Cubs, Theo preached about the Cubs way, which I think kind of fell by the wayside later in the years when we were having that run into the NLCS. They're starting to get back into it right now. Dare I say, Jed Hoyer is doing a good thing. I know how we both feel about Jed Hoyer, but I think it's a good thing to get your younger players to play a certain way, have a certain culture, and when that transitions to the major leagues, you don't have to worry about that because they came up through the system. Mm. It's something that all teams should actually do. Get your younger players that are going to make it to the show at that level, because it not only makes them a better teammate, it also helps them handle adversity as well. So I think that it's a good thing.
It's good. And you think about it too, like some of these guys, you know, like the Pete Crow Armstrongs are, you know, as they come up, that's like still 2-3 years out. But you also have the higher levels, the Canarios, the obviously the Matt Mervis, those guys as well. They're having their opportunity to play this stuff. And then they're going to, you know, next year they can be inserted into some sort of pennant race. That's a good thing for the Cubs. You know, I'm critical of Jed Hoyer on certain things that he has done, but this is something he's done really well. He's really hit it out of the ballpark. This is a great mindset. Again, I have a problem with how everything went down, I don't think he really didn't have a choice. He was doing the emperor's bidding, and in this case, he's making do with what he has, and I think he's done with what he's done. He's great with everybody else's prospects. He's done a great job of getting talent, compiling talent, and I think that he is this is a good franchise mantra, if you will. That will help, I think, down the line produce another winning ball club. So I think he's doing well here. And I, you know, I can be critical a lot, but the Cubs, this tells me the Cubs are on the right path, I think.
This is a first step into a long process, and it's done well. Now we have to see how he goes from here.
You can't screw it up. You know, you get a second chance to reboot this system. And now can you please prove that you can do the same things the Dodgers do, which is have a fantastic minor league system and still spend money at the major league level the proper way and not be worried about, you know, just retooling over and over again like the Dodgers have. It's been fantastic watching them. I mean, they already clinched the number one seed. today,
but intelligently.
Mm-hmm. So,
and haven't the Dodgers, aren't they the first team ever to win like 104 games or more in three straight seasons?
Yeah,
it's or something like that.
It's impressive.
I think they made the playoffs. Is that good? Years.
Yeah, it's been a decade. Yeah. Yeah, they were.
I should say three full seasons because 2020 obviously doesn't factor into that.
Mm-hmm. It's a good franchise. They've cornered the market on doing it well, and they've struck lightning in a bottle over and over and over again. But you know, when you take risks, that's what happens. You hit pay dirt.
When you're not afraid to take risks.
Yep.
And when you're upfront when it fails and say, you know what, we screwed up on that one. You know, you'll get more cred with the fans if you come and do that than what's currently going on the south side of town.
Yeah, stop shoveling shit in your mouth and telling you it's, you know, filet mignon when it's fucking bolt, you know,
right.
Cow pie.
Just because you went to Harvard and you went to Michigan doesn't mean you're smarter than everyone else. It just means you paid a whole lot more for an education on how to suck. And you went
to Michigan. Sorry. Doesn't mean you're smarter
than everyone else. Echo. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, and so that's where the Cubs are at least, you know, and with the White Sox, this is weird, but there is a potential that the White Sox.
Oh, God, we're talking about them again?
We're going to talk about the window here. We're going to talk about windows again. But I think that there might be a point where the Cubs and the White Sox window might be.
Two ships in the night passing each other.
I hope there's at least like a window where they're like at least a year or two where they're both good and we can still play with this red line World Series idea. But
I think it depends on what happens this offseason with the Cubs. Yeah. This is going to tell you what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. As a Cubs fan, I want for Sox fans like Pete and Swole and you know everybody we talk to, like I want the Sox to win so badly, especially during this time because it's very hard to win in the window.
Yes.
Huh? And you know, with our team, I don't trust this front office. Yeah, I just gave some, you know, roses and bouquets to Jed for what he's doing with culture, but I don't trust our ownership and I don't trust our front office. And they keep doing regurgitating the same thing. We're going to spend it intelligently, and fans eat it up and say, oh, they're spending intelligently. Well, you have pieces coming through the system. Now you can start building those foundation pieces and signing those big contracts. So we'll see what happens this year. And then we can start talking about maybe having some, down a line, maybe that red line series, but actions, until the Cubs show me something, I don't know.
Actions speak louder than words. Actions speak volume, especially with the Cubs front office, because they've told us 2 years in a row, and they, you know, started with the Yu Darvish trade all the way up to where we're at now. So it's not great, but maybe next year we'll see. But you know, and we did. So those of you that have not been with us, we did a previous podcast with Yumper and Swo with at the show earlier tonight. So this is the tail end of like a marathon.
Almost four, like 3.5 hours now.
Some grindhouse shit right here.
Yeah.
And so it's been, you know, so make sure you guys check that out at Yumper and Swo. Right. Is it at Yumper and Swo? Is that your Twitter? Yes. Yeah. And then, before we leave, obviously, guys. So what do you guys, let's go Bears. Let's go positive with the Bears. We'll do that before we head out. Yump for you.
That's right.
Where do you see the Bears headed? And then, Swo, we'll take you. Where do you think the Bears are headed next couple of weeks? And then, Pete, you can take us on out.
I think the Bears, for the Bears, I think they're going to keep growing as a team. I think my final season prediction is probably them being 6-11. I hope Justin Fields takes this game and throws it in the fucking garbage can and then comes out and plays way better next game. I want to see how he responds to this. I think next game, who they play next? The
Giants.
New York Giants, isn't it?
Giants. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Giants are actually decent. But I think it's going to be a fun game. I hope he has a bounce back game and shows that his talent's out there and kind of quiets all the haters.
Yeah, I think the Giants record does not reflect how good they actually are. I think they're probably still a pretty trash team. I think Daniel Jones is
hurt too.
He's hurt.
He got hurt. Did he get hurt today? Or no, it's Mac Jones from New England who got
Mac hurt. Jones got hurt Jones. Today, but I think Daniel Jones is still a pretty shitty quarterback. I know it's really rich from a Bears fan calling another team's quarterback shitty. but I think the Bears have a chance to win some games here the next few weeks. It's never easy to win a divisional game, especially like with Kirk Cousins as your quarterback. So I think the Bears have some winnable games here. I know Kirk Cousins is an elite quarterback, Fids.
You don't know ball. You don't know ball.
But I don't care about wins or losses this year. I want to see progression from Justin Fields. And then I want to see the money spent properly in the offseason. It'll be nice to have a first-round pick and watch the draft with the Bears drafting in the first round again. That's all I care about.
All right. And as far as the Bears, I think they should – I think they can win the Giants game. I think the Vikings game, I could see them losing that. And then they have the short turnaround with the Washington Commanders on a Thursday night here in Chicago. And I could see a victory there too. So you're talking about a team that could possibly be 4-2, which, given where this Bears team is not a bad thing at all. And I think it would be a testament to Eberflus if they got to 4-2 with the talent level that they have on the field, to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. But what everyone else has said about, you know, riding the year out, because we know they're not going to be Super Bowl champs this year, but riding the year out, then having all that cap space and having the first round draft pick and basically attacking, hopefully if they do it right, you could have a serious playoff contender come next year. Mm-hmm. But again, you have to have a lot of pieces fall into place just right. But the possibility is there because of the cap space and the first round draft pick, you know, and I've seen people already wanting the Bears to tank so they could draft the quarterback from Alabama. And I'm like, please no, stop. Please no, stop. We're
not there yet.
I'm exhausted from quarterback searches with the Bears, to be honest with you. You know, it's like trying to find a drummer for Spinal Tap. You know, trying to find a quarterback for the Bears. It's exhausting after a while. So, but with that said, Yump, Zvo, thank you for joining us. It's been a long, interesting, and entertaining evening. Again, go check out our friends Yump and Zvo and their podcast, Yump and Zvo at the Show. Like I said, we did a dissertation about the life and times of Adam Sandler on that. It's quite entertaining, I'll say the least. I learned one fact on it that I never knew, and that was Adam Sandler, in order to make Grown Ups, the movie Grown Ups, turned down the role of Donnie in Inglourious Bastards. The Bear Jew. I still have visions of Adam Sandler. I'm the Bear Jew. But, you know, that's for another day. With that, thank you very much for...
Pete, before you go, just one time for me, can you do the little Nicky voice for me again?
All right, guys, let's do this.
Or do you want me to do the other voice I did? Hey, guys. But
thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on,
thank
guys.
You very much for joining us. Like I said, if you don't follow and listen to Yumper and Zvo, what the hell are you doing wrong? Get on it and get on it now. You'll learn a lot of great stuff about movies and film and everything else. And you'll also get to hear about how evil dies tonight on every episode.
There it is.
But with that being said, thank you very much for listening. The greatest gift you can give anyone is your time. And we truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to this. So with that, I will turn it over to the wise man that we all follow. The man who guides us through life and provides infinite wisdom. The one, the only, Yeah Dog. Yeah Dog, take it away. Aloha.
From what I understand, every rock star wants to be a comedian. Every comedian wants to be a rock star. And every golfer wants to be a NASCAR driver. Pete? Yeah, dog.